Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where we cover work and money for millennials with the hope we don't leave you saying, well, that wasn't helpful.
And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Pay Balances and on Facebook at Paycheck and Balances.
And shout out to those that have left us 5-star reviews since the last roll call. So this week we've got Alan Dan 14. I think that one's new. Be Nice 3413. And yo, it's actually 10 with 3 exclamation points, but I decided I'd spice it up a little bit.
Nice, nice. Well done, sir.
And if you've been enjoying the show, don't forget to subscribe and hit us with a review on Apple Podcasts. This helps us stay up there in the rankings, which means we reach more people. And if we reach more people, we help more people. And if you don't know how, visit paychecksandbalances.com/review. We make it super simple.
Today's episode is sponsored by FreshBooks, the cloud accounting software, the millennial entrepreneur. It doesn't matter if you're side hustling or doing your full-time thing. You need cloud accounting software that makes it super simple to track how your business is doing. To get a free 30-day trial, visit paychecksandbalances.com/freshbooks and enter Paychecks and Balances in the How Did You Hear About Us section.
Nicely done, good sir.
Appreciate it, appreciate it.
So what's good this week with the Money Minute, man?
So Money Minute slash listener question. How should your budget change if you're planning to have kids? Any initial comments there, sir?
Save more, get rid of debt. Actually, it's stuff I started thinking about. I'm not on the verge of having a kid, but I'm like, all right, debt, check that off. I mean, I still got a car note. Savings accounts, got that in place. The whole child education fund, have yet to begin there. I think I got some time on that. At least it feels that way now.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. I was asking, I would think, you know, not to, I don't know if it would be a jinx or a congratulations, but I just feel like you are further down the adulting journey that is preparing for parenting than myself. So that's why I asked. So those were good responses. Don't get me wrong.
Not
putting you on the hot seat. No 21 questions.
I think with the relationship and with the pet, I'm getting a lesson on both sides.
Yes, fur parenting. Yes, I'm somewhat familiar. I'm fur babysitting. For those who
still,
yeah, I have this 91-year-old Chihuahua until the 26th of the month. So I only, as I told my boss who was trying to keep me late one day, I was like, "Look, I gotta get home and walk this 91-year-old Chihuahua because my only goal is return her to my parents how they gave her to me, which is breathing."
I wish you the best of luck with that.
Trust me, it's not. It's actually a challenge. So the listener question is from at Romero Manuel. I think I'm saying that correctly. Hypothesize. How would you change your budget if you had children? Great podcast! !
Appreciate that.
So y'all know I like to open with a little context. Let's look at the facts and the figures. So from CNN Money from 2017, I'll put this in the show notes. The cost of raising a child for 18 years, $233,610.
That makes me want to expedite some of my plans. Those very things I just talked about.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and repeat that just in case somebody thinks I said it wrong. There was a rounding error. You know, maybe you pulled over to the side of the road because you have a child on the way. And so $233,000, $610. They didn't put any pennies. So maybe they're rounding down. I don't know.
And you said that's through age 18?
Age 18. And I don't think it includes the cost of college. So that's just child rearing, if you will.
No comment.
There was also another study. Would be parents unprepared for potential cost of raising a baby? This was performed by NerdWallet, where they analyzed the expenses of a baby's first year in two hypothetical households to illustrate how families with different resources might navigate these potential costs. There's a number of findings. I'll put these in show notes, but I'll highlight three. The first year of that $233,610 of parenting is potentially costly as much as $21,248.
You know what's crazy? I've heard some people say that, oh, when you first have a kid, it's actually not that expensive if you have health insurance, blah, 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 blah. Now, the health insurance piece is a big if, but I've heard people say that, you know, you're feeding them, there's the doctor's visit, there's the baby clothes, but it's not like, you know, they're going to school or anything when they're first born. So I am a little surprised by that number.
I would assume, I mean, there's probably unique experiences. Of course, not every child's going to be reared the same. I'm sure there's, you know, oh my God, the $233,610, I'm going to keep repeating that throughout the show, is birth through age 17. Excuse me, not age 18. So there's another year of expenses, unless I think my father told me on my 18th. So are you moving out today or tomorrow? But if you're going to let your child live home from age 17 to 18, there will be another year that you need to account for. Hopefully a less costly year.
I can already see some parents hitting us up, telling us what the real is. And we definitely appreciate that. So do email us, info@paychecksandbalances.com, or hit us up on the Twitters with your feedback. We were asked to hypothesize, so we going with it.
Yeah, it's actually, to your point, amazing to me. I can't even really wrap my head around as a non-parent. This reminds me of the 500,000 struggling to live paycheck to paycheck episode where didn't they spend this amount of money on food? I can't even figure out what would a baby be doing to cost $21,000 a year in his first year.
People are going to tell us. We'll know very soon, man.
Please write in. Please write in. Like, what are these kids doing? Like, is it Gucci from the socks, you know, from the flops to the socks all the way to the little baby hat? Like, I don't know. Seems like a very luxurious baby, though.
Well, so here's one thing I think of, because I've even thought about this living out here in the Bay Area. So let's say you don't have family nearby to help take care of the kid. That's got to make a huge difference right away. If the cost of getting childcare is the equivalent of a month of rent or a little bit less than a month of rent, I could see that getting that crazy that quickly.
That does make sense. That does make sense. And I'm trying to get the exact math in front of me here, so I'll get that behind the show notes. But yeah, definitely write in. I mean, maybe y'all can help us wrap my head around. So let's see. I'm scrolling through here. Childcare. You're right. Childcare. There's two scenarios here, so I'm going to pick the first one. $8,000 for the first year. So yeah, that's a pretty big chunk of the $21,000.
That's a third. There's still two other thirds that have, well, a little less than two thirds that have me curious, but those answers shall surface.
I'm looking, and like I said, folks, this will be in the show notes. Housing is $4,600, but I'm like,
don't you already have that?
Yeah, what does that mean? is the baby living in a small, tiny home? Like I said, this is a very luxurious child that we are talking about here. And they have it broken out here as transportation, $3,300. So I guess maybe they are specifically saying these are the costs that they are estimating are attributed to having a child in the home, driving around. There's food, childcare, health insurance, health care, and miscellaneous, which they include as diapers, clothes, toys, and stroller.
And I guess if you also don't have people who are donating to the what's the thing that's online? A registry. And you're not getting, I've heard cribs are OD expensive.
I've heard and actually confirmed, because I went to a beer and diaper party, which I love and recommend for everybody.
Tell me more. Tell me more. I want to know more about that.
It was fun for adults, kids, children, men and women alike. So basically a diaper and beer party, at least the one that I went to, that you can either bring diaper or beer. You can't get in the door without one or the other. So my significant other at the time brought diapers and I brought beer, and hijinks ensued as the beer was being drinking, as you might imagine. Next thing I know, the guys were like, there was a baby shower event and we were like over participating in the beer events. And then like suddenly somewhere in there, like they merged and yeah. So like I said, great party. I had a great time. And I recommend it across the board if you are planning to be.
I thought it was going to be the equivalent of a baby shower, but for men, but this is a co-ed celebration.
No, it was a co-ed celebration. And to even up the ante, there was a keg. So,
all right, this sounds like it's escalating.
Oh, yeah. It was an event. It was an event. And I know you ain't even got to do the keg. I felt like that took it to the next level. But I definitely feel the diaper and beer party is the wave. And can I maybe even potentially help you with this $21,000 in first year cost?
Learn something new every day, fam.
So 54% of hopeful parents believe their baby's first year of life will cost $5,000 or less. So clearly a lot of people, that's one in two people, are wrong.
Well, that kind of fits with what I was saying. Where there are some people who are like, it's actually not that expensive taking care of the baby because it just lays around the whole time, and assuming there are no other health issues or anything like that. So I too am in this camp of 54%, or at least I was.
Well, to your point, it kind of seems like if you had family that was either willing to help with childcare or be the childcare, the primary childcare, that would take away transportation and childcare costs, of which they're estimating 8,000 and 3,000 respectively. So yeah, that's about 12,000 right there. About almost actually a little bit more than half. That makes sense. Need to hit the grandparents up. I'm literally saying that because the future grandparents listen to this show and I'm mentally preparing them for this.
Godparents, cousins, friends, all those other things too.
I'm putting a heavy lean on the network is what I'm saying. Maybe this even goes back to the importance of building your network, which we've talked about on previous shows.
You might be onto something.
Americans in general are only slightly more realistic, with 44% believing the average U.S. baby's first year will cost $5,000 or less. So people are gravely underestimating, unless they live very close to child care, full time to part time recipients, of how much the first year of baby's life will cost. That's quite the range. That's actually an insane amount of range from 5,000. I mean, if you underestimated it from 5,000 to 20,000, like that's $15,000 you didn't count for the first year.
That's $15,000 of stress if you didn't account for that.
And then let's talk about the current parents. 57% regret not taking more financial action during the first year of their baby's life. Their biggest regret, 1 in 3 wish they'd started or contributed more to a college savings plan for their child. So, as you mentioned.
I could see that. Because, you know, in some ways, it's almost like it's similar to the 401k side of things, where the longer you wait, the more painful it gets.
Yeah, I could see that. And so I'll expand on this a little bit, you know, now that I've set the foundation, the context, if you will. My answer to the question would be, yes, number one, I'd update my budget. I have a budget that I track month to month already. I'd have 9 months to now account for potential new baby. And now that I have some figures to work from, I'd start there. So I'm trying to think. I'm on a 50-30-20 budget right now, so I'm not sure that I would change the allocations, but I would either move some of the savings or the debt spending to establishing a childcare account or fund, but something type of emergency fund would definitely be a higher priority right now, because, you know, it's a first world problem to have, but it's right now, actually for some time, like if I just blow my budget out of the water, you know, do everything wrong, it hurts me. And it's that, like, you know, I'm hurting for the month and then I just move on to the next month. And there's been times where I'm like, well, you know, Marcus will just eat a few cheese sandwiches, you know, ante up on the ramen for the end of the month, drink some water and I'll be good. Whereas there'll be a significantly greater impact on not sticking to, or as 2 in 3 Americans don't have a budget whatsoever. So I would definitely update my budget. And I'd probably even, as Aaron talked about on help me out here, brother.
Yeah, I was trying to scramble and then I was like, that's gonna make way too much noise, so I'm just gonna fall on this sword real quick.
But as Aaron was talking about, basically planning ahead. So she even started testing out the budget that she had or would have when she transitioned out of her job. So you can start testing out restricting your budget on what it would be like if you did have a child in place. So if you did have to start planning for childcare, this transportation cost, these are costs that you know are going to be fixed or maybe even fluctuating in the next few months. You've got 9 months to start even testing that out.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good application of that.
Yeah, I think most people, you know, like most things, like you said with the 401k, they wait until it's here and then it is what it is. That's a lot more difficult to adjust. And as you mentioned, I'd lower my debt as much as possible. Obviously, you'd want to be to zero, and that would, of course, make it much more easier to raise your savings fund if it is at zero. But lower it as much as possible and basically get my affairs in order. Even if I couldn't get it to zero, as I've recommended on a few different shows, I might get it down to one allocation, whether that was one loan, a consolidation loan, a 0% interest credit card. I would try to centralize everything so it's one payment instead of, you know, having 4 or 5 payments coming in every month. I at least know that the credit payments or the debt payments are going to be this much and this much, and they're going to come in at this amount. They're going to come in on the 15th of every month. So I would definitely try to basically rein it all in. Maybe the theme there for these first two is get a hold on everything that is going on and then try to silo it or bucket it accordingly.
In that episode, it's PB 53. So I was able to type quietly. P PB53, Broke Millennial, featuring Aaron Lowry, in case you're wondering which Aaron we're talking about.
Yes, sir. And my primary focus actually would be able to switch to establishing emergency fund at least 3 months, a goal of 6 months. And like I said, anything would be better than 0.0. I'd say that thematically across the board, even with the 401ks, like, oh, I can't save a million, so my solution will be to save zero. Nah, that's not how any of this works. So if you can't save 6 months, even 1 month is better than 0 months. So I would definitely start putting something aside. And then for me, most importantly, I'd start exploring my insurance options, which I'm actually surprised why that didn't come up. I looked on Quora. So, am I saying that correctly? Quora.
I think that's right. Someone will correct us if it's wrong.
I'm going to spell it out. Q-U-O-R-A. But I was basically looking into, I think I Googled something to the effect of what would parents tell future parents. And there was a great paragraph that came from there. Health insurance, life insurance, whole, term, umbrella insurance. I don't even know what that means. Disability insurance, accidental death, dismemberment insurance. I'm having one of those days. Car insurance, home insurance. It's no longer about me being gone, but about the welfare of those I leave behind.
Yeah, that's a pretty big mental shift, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's exactly, I think, related to my point from earlier. Like right now, I think I have the luxury of, and many, I think many single people do, is, you know, yes, I might not be doing this right. I might not be doing that right. I could be doing that better. But hey, it only hurts me. You know, I'm not hurting nobody. I'm following the law. I'm paying my taxes. Leave me alone. All I got to do is pay taxes and die. And I guess in this scenario, she's saying, and if you did pay taxes and the worst case scenario did happen, there's more than you to be concerned about. And let me even say this in full confession. We've talked about in the black box offline for y'all who aren't familiar with that slang, having an insurance specialist on the show. I don't even know what my insurance is right now, because I know I have insurance. I have life, some basic life, and I have this is the exact point. I don't even know the insurance I have. I just know I have it. It comes out every month. I think it's long-term disability. But yo, go ahead.
It's funny because I was trying to help you, but I'm like, everyone's stuff is so different. I don't even know where to begin with what you get given the sector that you work in.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's exactly my point. I have it, but I don't even know it. And to be perfectly honest with you, even right now, I'm not even worried about it. I'm not even worried about not knowing what it is because as far as I'm concerned, like, you know, I don't want to be too morbid. We can get back on topic here. But, yo, like, if I go and there's no family and those children, just put me in a box. Like, put me in the cheapest pine box. It ain't got to be a box. Like, you can literally pull a box out of the closet and just be like, ah, he's good. Like, don't worry about me. Keep it as low-key as possible. And whatever my minimal insurance covers, do even less than that. And you know what? Take a little tip for yourself.
I don't think you really want to go out like that, man. And be going into the ground in a furniture box, you know?
I'm already out. Trust me, man. Like I said, it don't have to be the morbid one. We'll hold this conversation for the insurance specialist, but look, don't worry about me. Keep it cheap. Keep it cheap. In fact, you could put that on tombstone unless it costs too much. Keep it cheap. And the day my child was born, I would start a college fund. So one of the many but greatest gifts my parents gave me was allowing me to graduate with almost $0 in college loan debt. And honestly, the only reason that it wasn't $0 was completely my fault because I transferred schools, and I won't go into all the details, but all my credits didn't transfer. And frankly, I just transferred because I wanted to. I'm sure I had a better reason at the time. But, you know, 20-something me, I didn't need a particularly good reason.
Wait.
So go ahead.
So I'm not sure if I knew that. Maybe I did, but I forgot from over the years. So your parents made it where you didn't, or where you would have very little debt, and then you still found yourself in a lot of debt.
Yeah, credit cards. So my student loans, and we've talked a little bit about this. I won't go too much of a tangent. I had about a $3,000 student loan that I carried, and it was like to cover my last semester of school, basically, from the transfer. I lost about a semester. And what happened is there was, and I think it actually went bankrupt, which is, you know, interesting. But there was a Texas Tomorrow Fund that my parents vested in, about the, I guess, equivalent of a actually, I think it's a 457 now. But basically, you put money aside for college tuition, and they would match whatever tuition was in a public university in the state of Texas. And I mean, it wasn't limited to me, but this was an offer they had. And of course, as everyone knows now, college has like ballooned since then. So the fund itself went bankrupt. But I was able to go to a public university, and it would pay for 4 years of school. But it took me 4.5 years to graduate. Thus, I had to pay for the one semester.
But,
you know, that goes back to the greater point. And we never really sat down, that I recall. I've been corrected about this many times because my folks now listen to the show, about the why. Does that make sense? So, yes, is it good to give a 20-year-old or to pay for their school? Yes, of course. It was now, in hindsight, the greatest gift, or one of the, like I said, one of the greatest gifts they ever gave me. But as far as I'm in my head, I'm like, free money. So I was out making it rain and making it ball, because like I couldn't wrap my head around what it would be like to graduate without $37,000, as far as the average amount of school debt is. Because no one had really ever sat down and talked to me about it. Like, so I didn't know what student loans. In fact, I always found it weird when all my friends were like, yo, I got my reimbursement check and my refund check. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm about to buy some rims. I'm like, man, where are they getting all this free money? And I was actually mad that my free money wasn't as free as their free money. I'm like, my school's already paid for. I don't even get free money. And now I see that money wasn't free. And there, a lot of them, we now talk about it like, hey, yeah, remember those rims that I bought in 2001, I'll be paying those off in 31. So, you know, it happens. But I think that's why another thing that I actually didn't touch on here is, to some degree, and I don't know how, this, you know, child to be, I'd also like to really have more forward open conversations with them about budgeting. And to the degree possible that I feel like involving them, you know, why we're making certain financial choices in the house, and like really how to put their budget together so they can start thinking about these things in their teens that I didn't start thinking about until my late 20s and early 30s.
Mm.
So that was probably a very elaborate way of saying, yes, I was financially irresponsible. And that is the excuse that I give to you, the people, throwing myself on the mercy of the court.
Hey, man, at least you're honest.
Hey, man. Yeah. And to wrap that up, you know, I graduated with $9,000. So the majority of $9,000 in credit card debt. The biggest splurge actually came from the consolidation loan when it came to me in the mail. And then I was like, free money. So, yeah, you know, you see a pattern here. Two money moves every parent should make before having kids, from Business Insider, to wrap this particular conversation up, unless you have additional comments, friend. When asked what they tell new parents to do with their money before having their first child, respondents overwhelmingly said two things: travel and save more.
I am not surprised. I hear travel so much from people with kids. Actually, yeah, it's the very first thing I hear when people start talking about family, and they're always like, you better travel and enjoy life while you're young. And I'm like, that makes it sound like having a family isn't great and like having a kid isn't great. But they're like, no, it's the best thing that ever happened to you. But nothing was the same. Nothing was the same.
The end. End. And yeah, have you ever, I don't even know if this is a joke anymore, but it used to be more common because of the way our break room was set up before, where like the parents, I was like one of the few people in management that also wasn't either a parent, I wasn't also married, or, you know, some combination of the two. And they were always like, I felt, you know, I don't know, but it felt like they were living vicariously through me. They're like, hey, man, what'd you do this weekend? I'm like, nothing. They're like, nothing. Like, they are personally offended that I did nothing with the availability of my time. I'm like, no, you know, I chilled, I Netflix, you know, I think I slept 48 hours of the 72. They're like, oh, if I was single without kids, I'd be traveling the world and I'd be taking trips to Uranus and back. And I'm like, no, I was just a little sleepy. In fact, I'm still a little tired now. I might take a nap on my lunch break, you know. So anyway, it is what it is.
People got to be careful with the travel, though. Because
travel and save more.
I mean, I understand. And so what I take away from that is, get out there and have life experiences that you may not be able to have now. But I don't think that means, you know what, I got $1,000 in my account, so I'm going to spend $600 on this trip and then have $400 left and then start saving.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I know it's easy to get caught up in the, you know, one for one or even two for two, but without being overly simplified, I think it all can be done if you set the appropriate percent allocation. So I think these articles were assuming parents, and when they said future parents, they were assuming either someone who was planning to be a parent or would be a parent in the next 3 years or so. With that type of time frame, and even as I said, with the 9 months, I could make adjustments that would allow me to prepare that I'm actively not doing now. I mean, I'm just honestly tell you, like I said earlier, I don't even know what my insurance is. And frankly, I don't care. Or as far as life goes, I have health insurance that I care a lot about.
Yeah, I was going to say, you better care about that, buddy.
Yeah, that's terrifying because that's one of those things that you don't know you need it till you need it. Better to have it than need and not have type of thing. So I actually have pretty good insurance as far as health goes. But as far as life and long-term disability, now, mind you, I was about to say the odds of me having any long-term disability were zero to none. But recently I hurt both my wrist, and I don't even know how. I think from typing.
I was going to say doing push-ups, trying to impress someone.
No, I think I hurt my wrist typing up policies and procedures these last few months.
Yeah, that sounds like a workers' comp issue. I mean, I'm not going to go down that road of paperwork, but you might want to check, man. You might have a case there.
Let me tell you how corny this is, and then I'll move on. So yes, to your point, I thought I heard it at the gym. I can go to the gym, bench like, you know, 200, no pain. Not really, because that's actually less than I used to be able to bench. So let me like do my wrist like 45 degrees down. I'm like, I'm like crippled. I'm like on the ground crying. Like I can't bend my wrist at the angle it takes to type, although it has gotten better. But number two, I used to think that I'd never need long-term disability because I'm like, you know, I don't work in a I don't work in construction. Like I don't work in something that like puts my body at risk, but my body is clearly breaking down. Like I hurt my leg swiveling in my chair. Like I thought I was going to need long-term disability. Like I think I stood up too fast. The knees started doing the snap, crackle, pop, which I'm familiar to. And I'm like, oh, I had to like sit back down. I'm like, whoa. Stood up a little bit too quick there, brother. And so maybe I do need to take long-term disability insurance more serious than I do is what I'm trying to wrap up there.
Yeah. So I know sometimes companies will provide you short-term disability with no cost. And there's also some companies that might even provide you long-term disability with no cost. And so it might be one of those things that when you're doing your annual enrollment and it's like accept, decline, you might be declining it, bro. You might want to look into that when the renewal season comes around.
I think I have it. But yes, you're right in that. And to the point of at least as it pertains to insurance, I don't even know. I can't even sit here and tell you what my insurance is right now off the top of my head. I would have to go look it up. And that would assume that I'm going to go look it up, and I doubt I will until I have children or I am planning to do so.
Like I said, just, at least you're honest, man.
Yeah, I just want to remind the folks to remember a budget doesn't restrict you. It informs you. It lets you know where your money is going so you don't have to wonder where your money went. So show me where you spend your money. And I'll show you what's important to you. And to the parents out there, please write in. I'm definitely curious if you are planning to be a parent in planning? Let us know what you've changed in your budget. If you are already a parent, and I'll put it this way, if you're a parent of one child, what do you plan on doing differently financially for the second child? And then to help us all, what would you recommend or wish you had done before child one, two, three, or potentially four?
Cool, man.
And that's going to conclude this week's Money Minute. Thank you, folks, for the question. And if you have a question of your own that needs answering, don't forget to comment on the website or email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com or visit paychecksandbalances.com and hit the Ask PB button.
And so again, shout out to our sponsor, FreshBooks. They've rebuilt their cloud accounting software from the ground up to fit the way we, the millennials and beyond, work. And reporting can be a pain, man. Now, I know you've said you don't mind spreadsheets. I'm someone that doesn't enjoy living in spreadsheets, and FreshBooks has made it super easy. I was even able to send you a profit loss statement with the click of a button. Now, normally that's something that might have taken me an hour. I would have been frustrated. I would have had to take a shower because I would have been sweating mad. But I was able to just go into the system, hit a button, send that over to you, and you were able to easily see how we were doing as a business. Now, I'm saying all that on your behalf, but so it might be good for you to confirm that it was indeed easy for you to review.
That actually is very accurate. And as y'all know, they've been following on. I'm extremely low tech. I do like my spreadsheets, and I even like a good pen and paper. So even the profit and loss statement for me, simple, easy to follow. I recommend it. Believe in it. It's very easy to speak for this sponsor. Nothing but good things to say.
And so FreshBooks is offering PNB listeners a free, yes, free 30-day trial to get familiar, to sign up and see what easy accounting is like. Visit paychecksandbalances.com/FreshBooks and enter Paychecks and Balances in the How Did You Hear About Us section. So for this week in work, it's a topic that could be complex, but I'm going to try to simplify it. So I read an article on themuse.com by Emily Liu, L-I-O-U, called The Simple Step That Led to My Fiance Getting 9 Recruiter Calls in 1 Week. So, of course, that's a nice snazzy headline to draw all the attention and clicks.
It is a upworthy clickbait, but not worse than I've seen. The only thing that was missing was, and millennials suck on the end of that. And it would have, you know, that would have set it over the top if it wasn't viral already.
Well, I think this site is primarily geared toward millennials. So it would be surprising if they went that route. But yes, in any other place, that would make complete sense. And I think what this article ultimately boils down to is taking advantage of search strings on LinkedIn, which helps you be a lot more targeted in your outreach, figuring out what's out there, and also helps you to be less overwhelmed overall versus going on to Indeed. You type in a title, all this stuff comes up. You got to look through 8 million descriptions. Half of them aren't relevant to what you want to do. So there is a way to use search strings, which I'm going to talk a little bit about, to make that easier. And the goal here, it's not to have you become an expert in like search technology or anything like that, but to get you thinking of the tools that are out there that you could use to help you in your job search, whether that's something that you're thinking about now or something that you're going to be doing later on. And it's also something that as a recruiter, I think about a lot in terms of these search strings. That's how I go about identifying candidates. So when I go on LinkedIn, I don't just type in software engineer and see whatever comes up. I'll have some keywords, some phrases in mind that I use to narrow that list down. You know, I might include the geography if I'm looking for people in the Bay Area, and it allows me to get to a much more targeted list of people who are going to be qualified for the position that I'm working on. And also, we're going to include a link in the show notes to an article that gives you everything you need to know about Boolean search strings. And basically, it's like using a combination of and or statements to narrow your search. So some people might be thinking, oh, is this like logic with the if and the then and the or and the signs pointing this way and that? Nah, it's a lot more simple than that. So I thought it would be good to walk through a very simple example of how this works so that it's actionable. I think anyone will be able to do this afterwards if whether or not they're looking for a new job. Maybe they have an idea of what they want to do next and they're not pressed to be there today, but they kind of want to get a sense of what's out there. So, for example, let's say you're looking for a social media manager job in Chicago. So when you log into LinkedIn, on the top left, there should be a search bar. So you would type something like social media manager and you'd put that in quotes so that the system knows to search for the phrase as opposed to each individual word. Does that make sense, good brother?
It does. Actually, you just clarified something for me that I didn't even know I was doing wrong. So I appreciate that.
And so I'm going to keep...
Game changing. Not that I'm looking for work, folks.
And I'm going to keep asking you throughout to keep me honest in case it's getting too complex. Okay. So... All right. So you're looking for a social media manager job in Chicago. You type in social media manager in quotes so that it searches for the phrase instead of each individual word. Then you type and I'd put this in caps. That's just what I've been taught. And because some systems, they differentiate between caps and lowercase letters. So I always put the and or statement in caps. And so you'd go social media manager in quotes and Chicago. So at this point, you have the type of role you're looking for and the geography that it's located in. So if you hit return, enter, wait, do keyboards still have a return button? Actually, yes. My Mac has both enter and return on it. I thought I was dating myself there.
I'm glad you saved that because I was like, return, is that still a keyboard? I'm looking at my keyboard, it says enter. But I don't have a Mac, so, which is dating myself.
So at this point, you have a real simple search string. It's going to take you to a top results page where what you're going to see, and I made sure that this worked before talking about it on the show. So what you'll see at the top are a couple of positions that match the search. And then beneath that, you're going to see people that have social media manager in their title. And at this point, you could click on those folks and look at their backgrounds to get a sense of the type of career path they've had to get to the role that they're in. You might get ideas for additional keywords to help you further narrow down your search. Or just in general, if you're like, yo, I really want to do this in 2 to 3 years, 5 years, here are some of the things, or here are some of the positions that I might want to look at as kind of an in-between job to help me get there. Make sense still?
I like that. Yeah.
Cool. And so if you click on the post tab, and it should be super simple, you'll see a number of options at the top of the page, but this is where I thought it got really interesting and what I really liked about this article. So if you click on the post tab, you then get postings from people in that area, because you said social media manager and Chicago. So you're going to get postings from people in Chicago that have social media manager in whatever their post is. And more times than not, it's going to be a recruiter, a hiring manager, or an employee that's advertising the position at their company. And if it's an employee, it's likely that it's going to be a position on their team. And so from here, you could send them an invite. You know, I think everyone on LinkedIn has the ability to do that and include a brief message about your interest. Or you can send an email, which is basically a LinkedIn version of DMs. And what I like about this is it takes what's a cold lead, which I think of as seeing a posting, you go apply into the black hole, you don't hear anything back. At least at this point, you've identified actual people that have said, I am looking for, and you're able to engage or interact with them directly. Thoughts on that?
I always like a warm lead, is my simple thought. But I had a question here, and I don't know if this only came up for me. It's a potentially very auditor-like question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is there any, so you said pull some keywords, which I agree with, from maybe job descriptions or seeing people's career pathway that led to a job that you may be interested in now or in the future. Is there any issues with either, I don't have a better word, but like plagiarism, or is copying the sincerest form of flattery in this case? Like, okay, I see a great job position description, but it's on someone else's LinkedIn profile. And I go, oh, that sounds awesome. Do I just copy and paste it over? I don't know how that works here. Do you have any thoughts here?
I don't think there's any issues with plagiarism. I mean, if you took someone else's bullet points and just dumped them onto your resume as your own, I mean, maybe you have done all of those things, but chances are you haven't. I mean, I think it's completely fine to use someone else's background as a template for how you write your own resume or your own LinkedIn profile. Is that what you mean by that?
Yeah, exactly. Great.
Yeah. Yeah. And in terms of the search bar, you're going to want to take specific terms, keep using quotes in mind, the and, the or. And I think this also underscores the importance of having an up-to-date LinkedIn profile. So let's say you do this simple search. You see a hiring manager at a company you really like saying that they're looking for a social media manager. And if you're not employed, let's say you like the post and comment on it, because if you are employed and you're doing that, you're basically putting yourself on blast. You now have a direct path to the person who's looking for the role, but chances are, what they're going to do is say, oh, who's this person that liked my profile or liked this status? Who's this person that commented? Who's this person that's sending me an email or an invite? And then they're going to go look at your LinkedIn page and try to figure out if you're a good fit. To me, it's kind of like, it's not gaming the system, but you're basically kind of using human psychology in a way, going, okay, I'm going to engage. This person's going to get curious. They're going to look at my profile. And then if my profile is on point, that's going to increase the likelihood of them saying, hey, send me your resume. Or if it's a hiring manager or recruiter saying, hey, let's have a conversation. You know, maybe you're getting those 9 conversations in 1 week.
So I do have a comment here. Actually, it's a question. And I've had this happen. I know people that have had it happen to them. So is there any step to be taken when you apply for a company that you're interested in, and then you either see someone from that exact company has viewed your profile, and or broadly that company has viewed your profile? Do you recommend any follow-up? Should you reach back? Or is that just like, it's usually I just remain silent, by the way. So do you have any thoughts, questions, tips, or concerns?
You know, man, you just brought back a painful memory, bro. Just brought back a real painful memory. And I'm thinking about this time when I was looking for a job a few years back. So at the time I was working in HR and recruiting, and I was actually thinking about moving into more of a social media management, online web editor type of position. And I was applying for those roles directly with a resume that was geared toward a lot of the social media and blog type of stuff. But when they went to my LinkedIn profile, everything that they saw was just talking about my HR and my recruiting experience. So of course, those people looked at my profile and I did not receive any communication thereafter. And I couldn't see specifically who it was because they had their settings set where you could see what company they were from, but you couldn't see specifically who they were individually. So
yeah. I call that the Batman / the man setting, where just anonymous figure from company I really want to work at, life depends on, visited it, and then I heard nothing.
Yeah, man. So my thoughts on that, LinkedIn, after all, it is a social platform. And I think most people at this point who are using it to be able to really look folks up have a good grasp of their settings. And if they're leaving themselves visible where you can see that the person viewed your profile, maybe it makes sense to reach out to them. Maybe you look and it's the recruiter or it's the hiring manager and they've essentially made it easy to find them. And you can just reach out to them, say, hey, would love to connect. Hey, I noticed that there was exposition at your company. I'm really interested. Would love to be able to chat with you about my background. I think it makes sense because they've looked you up and they're visible. And at that point, all you're doing is saying to them, I take note of who's viewed my profile and I'm hoping to build this relationship. Now, there are going to be times where you may send someone a message who viewed your profile and it's public and they don't respond back. Like that's just naturally going to happen. But I don't want people to feel like they should be like scared or petrified of responding to someone who's clearly kind of at least taken a first step of interest. I mean, to me, I see that as more warm because they've taken the action of looking at your profile and all you're doing is following up on that view.
Cool. Sounds good to me.
Yeah. And I've had people where I've looked at their profile and then like a few days later, I'll have a LinkedIn invite from that person. Now, I mentioned that they don't always accept or respond. And I've definitely had those scenarios where I look and I'm like, yeah, I looked at your profile, wasn't quite a fit, and I'm not ready to add you to my network right now. And it doesn't hurt you in any way. You know, closed mouth doesn't get fed. So you got to do what you got to do. But at the same time, I caution people to be careful with the, I saw that you viewed my profile. I'd love to jump on a 20-minute call. What does Tuesday at 10 a.m. look like? That type of stuff kind of drives me nuts.
Yeah, I can see that. Does seem a little OD. I was going to say, is that a passive aggressive way? Or not passive aggressive. That's actually passive way of shooting your shot in this case for the job. So you see somebody view your profile rather than reach out to them with a formal message of, you know, I'd like to connect, I'm interested in a job at your company. You just ask to join their network.
Yeah, I've seen people start there. I think that's fine. And then because once they accept that connection invite, then you can message them directly and it doesn't cost you any in-mail credits. So that's like the first step, like, hey, can we connect? Which is kind of like saying, can we keep in touch one way or another? Person says, yeah, sure, I'll add you to my network. And then you don't have to worry about upgrading your service to be able to message the person because you're already directly connected to them.
Hashtag like.
Cool. And one of the other things with the whole search string thing on LinkedIn. So let's say you don't want to see something. You can type not in caps as part of whatever search string you're putting together. So for example, let's say you want to see social media manager positions from any company but Fleek Shop. I don't know why I chose that. So you put social media manager in quotes and Chicago. And after that, you'd put not in caps Fleek Shop. And so this is going to pull all the results for mentions of social media manager in Chicago that aren't from people at Fleek Shop. So that's just another way to be able to narrow your search results. That makes sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. I was trying to think of another company name like Leak and Flick, but yeah, Fleek Shop works for me. You know, I obviously can't come up with anything else off the top of my name, so I'll allow your branding to continue.
Yeah, I have no idea why I went with that. It just felt like it made sense. So that's pretty much it on this. I just wanted to give people a few things, and they're mentioned in this article as well, a few things to keep in mind to at least jumpstart how you go about looking for opportunities or finding people who are in the type of roles that you're hoping to be in. So again, and you could also do something like, you know, social media manager or, and then put a different version of that title. So maybe it's social media editor. Or, and build it out that way as well, so that you're not just capturing that one specific title, but you're also capturing different versions of it. And again, the focus here isn't to make everyone an expert within the course of one podcast episode. It's to get you to go on LinkedIn, try this out, see what works for you, see what doesn't work. Again, and we're also going to include a couple of resources that are going to help you understand this a bit better. And I'd love to hear back from people in terms of what they found and how useful they thought this was. And I hope it wasn't too technical. Tried to keep it super simple. And given this is something that I do on a day-to-day basis, I was like, oh, I'm going to go on the show and I'm going to give them this ill 10-item string with brackets and all of this other stuff. And I was like, yeah, someone's going to just hear that and just like tune out. So let me not do that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this was a good one. Like I said, you were 3 points in, corrected something I've been doing wrong for 2009 or so. When was LinkedIn founded? So it is what it is. Live and learn. Know better, do better.
Yeah. I mean, it's been around since, I want to say like 2003 or 2004, but people just weren't up on the game yet.
Yeah.
So that concludes This Week in Work. And yeah, we'd love to hear back from people. You can hit us on the pay balances, also via email. And if you enjoyed today's episode or found it useful, be sure to share. As we said up top, the more people we reach, the more people we help.
And don't forget to join our email list by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email. You'll receive our weekly newsletter where we share interesting articles we've discovered, actionable work and money tips, and much more.
So yeah, thanks to everyone for listening. And if you have questions you'd like us to cover, I know we've dropped it a few times, but again, info@paychecksandbalances.com. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.